Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for October 19th, 2002. We are grasping around trying to think what to talk about. And we have a dog with us who's just growled gently. Maybe he's already upset about whatever it is that we might say.
We haven't allowed him under the covers right now. Right?
He's really sad. Yeah. I don't know why we didn't do that.
He's a burrowed. This is a what is it?
A burrowing dog. A
chewini.
A chewini. Which is bad.
We're mostly weeny. He looks like, because he burrow. He likes to go burrow into holes, and so he burrows his head into our covers every time he gets a chance, and then growls if you touch him.
If you touch him, or you even walk into the room, right. He growls.
He's a really bad dog.
He's a terrible dog. He's a terrible, terrible dog. He's the dog for 2020. He's like he's a good mascot.
We should rename him 2020.
2020. That's awesome. So the only thing on my mind is the incredible events of this last week and weekend, which I thought I should talk about a little bit. And then we can talk about other things.
I mean,
even though I'm going to talk about it too much and then people are going to be irritated and like, please leave me alone. Because I've written.
Well, the context of the events of the last week is that after 6-7 months of isolation and, you know, I think the first few months of COVID, people were basically able to keep it together. But
it was rough at first, but then I feel like I settled in and tried to cope.
But now, I mean, understandably, people are having a hard, just small things, like just any small thing taps into like just the stream of hurt and pain and rage that erupts. So, you know, the church has had several, you know, pastoral issues that just are mostly because of people having been isolated from one another for ages and ages. I mean, the church really does, being able to meet a church and have actual fellowship, not distance fellowship, but actual fellowship it's part of the Christian's life. So you don't have that, it hurts over time. So then in that context, you know, what were you going to say?
I don't know. I'm just curious what you're talking about.
Well, we're one, right? God made us, we're unified. So I know that there's universal church where you're one with people, even though you're not around them. That's true. But it's part of the Christian nature to want to gather.
Yeah.
And have fellowship in a certain way that Christians do. And then not having that in a real way. I mean, having to mask up or be.
Yeah. For ages.
Just, it's like not eating for a long time or not.
Yeah.
Or holding your breath for too long, or I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's natural that small things cause massive reactions that maybe wouldn't be there if we hadn't been in this context.
Yeah.
So I was just saying, in that, what happened this week?
It's the word small that's tripping me up.
Well, I don't think this week was small. I'm just saying. Oh, okay. I'm saying the emotional temperature of the church right now
is already pitched.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I see what you're saying. And then on top of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I haven't been rolling. I was on Saturday night. I started to write something called Tuck and Roll because I felt like, well, the thing that's come to my mind over and over again through this entire year was like my grandmother. Before she died this year, was really tippy and she would fall really easily. And so when we went to visit about 4 years ago, I knocked her over in the kitchen one day accidentally. She just was super tippy. I just lightly brushed up against her and she tucked and rolled. She like fell over but was sort of back on her feet almost immediately she kind of went limp, but she tucked and rolled. She relaxed so that when she fell, it wasn't so. So that has been my guiding I don't know, since maybe June, when it just seems this year has been one thing after another, including fires in, you know, New Zealand or Australia or something, and then now fires all over America. One thing after another, I thought, okay, I'm learning how to tuck and roll. Like, if the wave of the Almighty comes at you, you don't necessarily need to stand your ground. I mean, you do need to not let go, I guess, if you're using a Jacob and the angel idea. You need to not let go. But you also don't need to stand upright, I guess, when it's God who's coming at you. You should stand against temptation. But if God brings suffering in your path, you don't have to, like, you know, stand your ground. You can just, bend out like a sapling that bends all the way to the ground and then comes back up, maybe.
Right.
It's easier if you're not brittle, right? So you tuck and roll. So I've been doing that all year. I've been trying to, you know, as one person after another has died, and my parents have just been really discouraged over the year trying to buy a house. Their lives have been completely upended by COVID. So, my gosh, I'm going to cry. It's too early in the morning. They finally bought a house after months and months of looking and hoping that their finances would come together. And then they managed to go across the country 2 weeks to go through their stuff in Oregon, which my aunt Sharon has been saving for them since the 80s in her attic. And they go through it all. They remember all the things they have, which they didn't need to do. Like, if you're going to lose everything, it would be really great not to remember and, like, handle each and everything that you kind of knew was there, but you hadn't itemized it. You hadn't, like, emotionally reconnected with all of your stuff. That's the part that, if you were going to wonder if God was cruel, like, premeditatively cruel, that's the part I'm stumbling over today. So,
well, and they, the fact they didn't even want to be here, really. They wanted to be,
to be in Africa doing their work.
But they had to come. They were diverted because of COVID. Right.
So they came back.
They were traveling. They couldn't go back to Kenya, so they had to come.
They came here.
So all
they accommodated
all
themselves to our household rhythms, which was not
easy for them.
Which was not easy because we have, you know,
we're six kids
homeschooling, so the kids don't even leave during the day. Of course, they wouldn't have been able to with COVID anyway. So,
but they wouldn't be driving across country with their stuff if COVID hadn't hit. Unfortunately, it's just like they were funneled into a trap, and then
That's what it feels.
Yeah.
And then so they go across, they're driving across the country, and of all the U-Haul trucks and all of the wide world, in all of the heartland of America, I guess, I don't know, is Indianapolis heartland. They pick a hotel not knowing that's not a great neighborhood, not knowing. And the hotel doesn't tell them, oh yeah, like this is bad. The hotel forces them to park in overflow parking, even though they protest. They said, do we really have to park? Can't we park closer? And the hotel was like, yeah, you can. You got to park way the heck over there, which makes me really wonder. And then U-Haul, after the truck is stolen, says, oh, yeah, somebody stole a lot of the U-Haul keys from our offices, and trucks are stolen all the time. But of course, when they picked the truck up, nobody said that to them. So they couldn't adjust their behavior.
And it's a bit suspicious the hotel didn't have video surveillance in the one lot they told them they had the parking.
Yeah. They said they had security. They asked. They said they had security, but they didn't have security. I just feel like it's too weird, honestly. But so they came home on Saturday without anything, like, and not just not anything, but like the not anything that they don't have is language data, a lifetime of pictures, my dad's Nigerian pipe collection that is, those pipes don't exist anymore. My mother's china that she hand carried from England. The needlework chairs that my grandmother made and her china. And I mean, that every time I go over, my mom remembers more stuff. So last night we started to make a list of stuff that they need. We're going to have a kind of an online shower where people can buy actual items, but also contribute towards some of the bigger stuff that they, you know, they had a beautiful couch that they'd been saving, or a love seat. Yeah. And my grandparents' dining room table. So, I shouldn't remain silent on air, but I am speechless. So yeah, anyway,
we're just in one night, all of that is,
all of it's gone. So at church yesterday, everybody was crying. That's where the, yeah, like, already people in our congregation are exhausted and stressed. And then it just, somebody said that I'm not even like a sentimental person, but I don't, you know, I'm not really invested in my stuff, but I feel like I've been punched in the gut just, yeah, thinking about all of this. So,
and so you're thinking, it's not fair. Your parents spend 30 years in the mission field, sacrificing everything for Jesus.
And then for Jesus to strike them down.
Yeah,
as somebody said yesterday, it's a really big ask of God. This is a big ask of God. It's like a peculiarly terrible thing for God to do,
yeah,
in human terms. And maybe even, I know God is good, so we say that. We like, well, it, I mean, it, you said that in the sermon, so I'm gonna go with that.
It feels like Job. It does feel like
it Job. Feels like Job. It's like a thing devised particularly for the suffering of a particular person. It's not random, in other words. This isn't like, how could God let this happen? It's like God particularly knew you and cared for you in a particularly terrible, terrible way.
I mean, sometimes she will say, I wish God didn't love me so much.
Yeah, I wish God would. Like, only God who knows you knows the kind of suffering that would be really painful for you. So, my mom, I've been trying for the last, well, the duration of COVID, to think about writing something more long form, like more in the vein of a book, under the sort of thing swimming around in my head, why do bad things happen to bad people? So on the phone, when my mom called me from Indianapolis early on Friday morning, the first thing she said was, I'm not a bad person. Like, bad things should happen to bad people. I'm not bad. And that's, in a Christian sense, that's true. She's numbered among the people who have faith in Jesus. She's gone from the category of bad into the category of Jesus, not necessarily like good on her own terms, but a person who has trusted God her entire life on purpose, deliberately knowing that he would take care of her. And what is that horrible line? The wounds inflicted by a friend are the worst ones ever. That's what this feels like. So.
Well, and it makes, I think it should make every Christian tremble a little bit, because.
Well, it makes me feel bad for trying to write this book. I feel like maybe that's my fault. If I hadn't tried to write.
Oh, and God's think giving about you a, God's an illustration.
Like, he's trying to give me material.
I'm sure that's not what,
like,
it is.
Maybe COVID is my fault. Because I was thinking this might be interesting.
I'm sure that's not what it is.
Well, I woke up in the middle of the night. Andy's
an illustration. And, I know.
And thought, I bet it's me.
No, I don't think it's. I mean, you know, you're thrust back on basic principles that whatever suffering God brings into your life, he has a redemptive purpose for. And this is really, I mean, this is the kinds of things that, you know, the whether the seed has really been sown on rocky ground or a ground that's full of thorns. Well, these are the things that try that.
You can find. Right? And so you're somebody so wants to know, God wants to know. So he's.
No, gonna... I know. I'm not saying, but it is like, I'm not talking about from God's perspective. I'm from our perspective. So seeing your parents yesterday at 8 o'clock coming to church and taking communion. And I mean, whereas if they weren't Christians, I think they would just throw it, say, this is not,
I'm not done. I'm not coming for 30
I'm
years.
Not, yeah, I'm done.
I'm done here. Yeah. You know what, as I'm sitting here in the dawn, well, you said it's like the Shire coming back to America and having all your stuff stolen after, you know, you go to a foreign land, you go to a faraway country, and then you come back and everything's been destroyed, basically. That this makes,
not just going to a far country, but going to a far country to
throw the ring into mortal.
Yeah, like to save the world. And then you come back,
I mean,
and your own world is destroyed.
Is destroyed. But it's really like the near sacrifice of Isaac, except in this case, God said, no, go ahead and kill it. I've saved this thing for you all this time, but now you can't have it. That's what it's like. Because Jesus. So my mom is a very Christian person. The first thing she did was to sit down and write a thank you note to somebody who gave her a box of chocolates in Oregon. That's one of the few things that made it, because it was in the cab, and so they took it into the hotel at night, was a box of chocolates of the world, along with a book of my grandmother's wretched and terrible poetry. My grandmother wrote the worst poetry ever, and she tucked that in, so we have that. But she sat down and wrote a letter, a thank you letter to the person who gave the chocolates. And then just, you know, basically articulated the gospel in the substance of the letter, as one would, except I guess most, I'm not doing that today. You know, she's been talking about Jesus in more kindly terms than I have for the last 72 hours. So she's a deeply Christian person. I mean, they both are. So I guess that is definitely becoming apparent on a day like today. We should talk about something else so I don't just cry for the entire time. Let's talk about empathy and how stupid that is. So the temptation at a moment like this is to become empathetic rather than compassionate.
Yeah. So
it was a really good article.
There was an article that was written by, what's his name? Find his name.
They're doing these sort of fake screw tape things.
If you don't know what screw tape is, it's C.S. Lewis' famous book. You should read it if you haven't. Screw tape is the name of a demon, and he's writing to a junior demon about how to corrupt Christians or how to corrupt people. And so it's fascinating, like, just the tactics.
As if they didn't need help on their own.
Yeah. And so this is written in the same vein. It's a screw tape letter. And so authored by Joe Rigney. And he makes a distinction between empathy and compassion. Now, I'm not sure that he uses the right word when he uses the word empathy. Because there is a sense in which empathy is good. But I think...
I mean, I don't know if you can get to compassion if you can't sort of enter into the reason why, you know, it's everybody can feel the horribleness of what's going on right now is because everybody has stuff and can contemplate losing that mm-hmm. stuff, and then enter emotionally into the emotional landscape of another person.
Right.
And I think you do need to be able to do that in order to be there and sit and weep with people.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing to do.
His point, though, is that what happens often is the demand of the person in pain is sometimes that you, as the one offering compassion, let go of the tether of what's God's revealed that would be really good for the person in pain, and simply
go with them all the way down to
the author, heal. Yeah, the author of the article presents compassion as the Christian virtue, where you both enter into the pain of the other person while at the same time keeping one foot
on dry land.
You don't go into the quicksand of the emotional vortex of the person without also holding on to that tether of Christian truth. So maybe a good example would be someone who has been hurt by the church not affirming his or her sexual choices or whatever. And so deeply pained, and maybe the church was
cruel about it.
And so that person, as a means of kind of browbeating the other Christians, might say, unless you fully affirm what I'm doing, you're doing the same thing the church did in the past.
Yeah.
So you have to let go of what you know to be true and what you think to be truly good, in order to utterly identify with my emotions.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing that Jesus would do in a situation like this. And that's the only thing the church should do in a situation like this. That's what he defines as empathy. I don't know if that's the right word, but that's how he's using it.
I think it's one thing that also with empathy that is, it's at least the way he's described it, is more narrow. And actually, because you can, in a Christian sense, you can enter into somebody's sorrow with them. You also don't have to feel all that sorrow with them to be compassionate. I think that's one of the problems right now, is that feelings are so much the measure of goodness.
Yeah.
That if one person is in pain and you don't go all the way into their pain with them, you haven't been with them. And that's not true either, because I've, through COVID, people have suffered things, and I haven't emotionally, I have been able to more intellectually understand where they are and pray for them and minister to them and be with them without necessarily every moment being in the same emotional realm that they're in.
Right.
And likewise to me, people have really, when my grandmother died, or various people, when our cat died at the beginning of the year, was really trying. I didn't need everybody to feel the loss of my cat, but I do have friends who are able to stand next to me with their feet on dry ground.
Yeah.
And just be there for me. The word that early when I was thinking about trying to write about it and never came together was a friend coined the term pain porn. Mm. And I think that that's what is going. It's like you hold up and examine your pain, but you also expect other people to do it too, to sort of invest in your emotional landscape without question.
Right.
And sometimes the pain that you're feeling, well, first of all, you don't have to live there forever. Like, the pain of something can and should slack off after a while, and it'll come back in waves, maybe.
Yeah.
But at some point, it's okay to cheer up, for instance.
Yeah. I do think sometimes it, the person who is really hurting doesn't want sometimes to come out of it.
Right.
Like you're saying. So there's a kind of indulgence in it. And and true compassion helps that person out of that. Whereas what this person's calling, what this author's calling empathy, actually fuses you to that person in such a way that there's no distinction.
You can't help them out.
Yeah.
And you never call the person to come out, because I think that the pain in our society is a moral good.
It makes the one who's been pained heroic in a way.
Yeah.
In a virtuous way. So this, I just want to read one section of this that I thought was really interesting. This begins, of course, with the sufferers themselves. Our policy, remember he's writing as a demon. Mm-hmm. Our policy has been to teach sufferers to resent all resistance to their feelings. Any holding back, any perceived emotional distance, especially a distance that is driven by a desire to discover what would actually be good for them, must be regarded as a direct assault on their dignity and an affront to the depth of their suffering. As I said before, this is not difficult. A human in pain is practically primed to say, "You don't love me if," and then to place entirely unreasonable demands on others. Our task is to give this impulse a little push. We want then their unreasonable demands to become ungodly demands.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that, I mean, I guess that, I think that that's the substance of social media, because pain on social media is a really good way to get attention. And, you know, have people love you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas, as it's like there's two extremes. You either get attention for being perfect, which most of us, if you're going to go that route, eventually you have to lie about how perfect you are, or you get attention for being in pain, and then so you there's no reason to come out of it, really.
Right. Right. People are focused on you. Why would you want to not mm-hmm. have people focused on you?
Too big a swallow.
Well, one example of this, kind of filling out the example I used before, but, you know, there's this campaign going on Facebook for former Young Life people.
Yeah.
To try and force Young Life, which is a Christian organization, to
change their policy.
Become, quote unquote, open and affirming.
Yeah.
And so it's all those stories, right? So the campaign is basically teenagers or former teenagers, I guess.
Yeah, I mean...
former youth, telling their stories of how they were hurt and rejected by Young Life when they came out. So, like, I was reading one young woman saying, "Well, I've always loved Young Life. I was involved in it, and then I wanted to be." This one asked me to become a leader, and as I was interviewing with them, I told them my story of being gay and how I'm going to have a partner, and then suddenly everything changed, and they told me I couldn't be a leader anymore. And so the person reading is supposed to let go of the tether.
Yeah. And go into the
just
a mire.
The vortex of the emotion.
Yeah.
And become fused with that person and then be angry at Young Life for not completely changing. Compromising its integrity and allowing this person to be in leadership.
On the opposite side of that, I'm reading Rachel Hollis's book, which ironically is called Didn't See That Coming, which she didn't apparently see her divorce coming, which is hard for me to believe. Whereas I did not see the stealing of this truck ever in a million years. I would never have thought of that. And she proposes so she goes on the other end, like, no, you should, she's not even considering empathy or compassion or anything. She suggests basically just completely lying to your friends and family, but most especially to your children, about your own levels of pain. Like, just sublimate it. Don't come apart for anyone. Don't.
Interesting.
Pull your life together. Just get over it. You know, get the therapy, whatever. Move on. Don't sit in the grief for any period of time.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it was this it's a wild swinging from the enthronement of pain as the only value to the complete and utter rejection of pain.
Yeah.
As being worth not even existing.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, it's got to be down the middle. You've got to have like the Christ. I mean, this was the point of the article. The Christ did come into our humanity, but he did not let go of the truth of God.
Right. He didn't.
And he actually pulls us out.
So he became among, he didn't, he walked among sinners, but he didn't become a sinner.
He didn't become a sinner in order to.
He took on sin, but he didn't become actually a sinner.
Yeah, he didn't have to sin in order to fully empathize with humanity.
Right.
Which I think many people would say now. You can't know this until you. It's the whole, the well, have you heard about, you know, remember in 2003. Everybody was wearing buttons that said, have you met Gene? Or, you know, the, if you just heard his story, then you would understand who he is.
Right.
And if you don't understand have emotionally who is, you can't speak about this issue either. You should remain voiceless in this situation.
Or unless you're a woman, you can't talk about abortion.
Right. If you've not been accepted. Oh, yeah. Men. So men can't talk about abortion. So, yeah. Well, I guess what we're saying is don't do that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because at the church, I feel like I'm glad this has happened. I think we've created an atmosphere where people don't have to plaster a smile on their face to come to church. People don't have to, like...
Right.
When you ask how someone's doing, they don't have to say... I'm loving the Lord. Everything's going great. This is a wonderful time in my life.
Yeah, I didn't have to go to church yesterday and like be put on a smile happy, and say, clappy.
Yeah. Things are bad right now, but I just trust God is going to bring us all through it and no big deal.
Yeah, I didn't say any of that.
Yeah.
In fact, I think I looked like death. And
I think you look beautiful, but.
Oh, thanks. People just didn't. I didn't actually have to say anything. People didn't say anything to me either. We've all learned from Job's friends not to be those people. So, yeah, you are allowed to be real in our church. And I did feel yesterday like people had their feet on the ground, even though I didn't. I think that was really, that's a really good image. Like, I don't actually want somebody to let go of reality in order to go with me.
Yeah.
Into my
depths. Because there's no way out.
Otherwise, then. I'm doomed.
Yeah. There's no way out for you. I mean, in the book of Job, I mean, there's some debate, but I think Elihu may be the model. Some debate whether Elihu is, he's a fourth friend.
Yeah, whether he's good or bad.
He's quiet the whole way through, but then finally he speaks up. And there's a question about whether or not he's right or wrong in what he's saying, but he is the only one who's not rebuked.
Yeah.
God doesn't rebuke Elihu. And he speaks of God being good, and he doesn't condemn Job, but he doesn't.
He does tell him
where he's wrong.
Wrong.
So Elihu might be the model of what this guy's
writing
the article about. Would be saying he's the one we should look at for what compassion looks like.
Although I think he is a bit abrasive. I don't know, like he's quite abrasive. I have gone back and forth between liking him and not liking him, and at certain points he could be, I don't know, there's room for tact. You don't have to like and there's also truths that everybody knows that you don't have to say all of them at one go. Like, you know, yeah, Jesus died on the cross for my sins. I totally get that. And I'm a sinner. But like, the thing that was standing out to me yesterday wasn't necessarily my own sins, but perhaps the sins of others. Like praying for your enemy. I don't know. You don't have to like, having wisdom with how you talk somebody through the grief of what they've had, you know, because my mother's first instincts was to blame herself. Well, it was my fault that I recommended this hotel. I thought we should, you know, do this. The only person who's done anything wrong is the person who stole the truck. So, you need somebody to navigate through that. Like,
yeah.
Which Job's friends did not do.
Right, right, right. So, I mean, but the one who stole Job's stuff was God.
Yeah, that's
or
the God, thing.
Or Satan did it through right. God, but with God's permission.
With God's permission. So that's the part that just rots.
Yeah.
Because
the same thing is at work here. I mean, the guy who stole was certainly not listening to God. He was listening to Satan, but he...
Well, his heart was as a stream in the king in the hand of the Lord.
And it's interesting about that. So, you know, God doesn't withhold punishment from those who do such things, even if he uses them for his own good purposes. So unless this person repents and his judgment is given to Christ, we can expect that this will be righted one day. Which doesn't fill your heart.
It doesn't really help me right now.
Well, I was reading this article about the imprecatory Psalms. And I was feeling better about the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to suppress the desire to bring a massive lawsuit against U-Haul and Candlewood Suites.
They're not Christians. Because that would...
Okay.
1 Corinthians 6 only applies to Christians. So we're free to put a massive lawsuit against.
That's fantastic.
I'm also very hurt and pained by the loss of my sermon page yesterday.
That was really terrible. I feel like Satan was attacking us yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I was
you were going along, and I was crying. Sermon was making me cry, and then you lost an entire page. No, I wasn't crying. I was crying in a good way about God glorifying Himself by Jesus on the cross. Was I guess it was pertinent. And then you lost an entire page of your sermon.
Yeah.
And then you found it 5 minutes later as you were going through the text.
It was the section where I was talking about how, you know, because this section we're in John chapter 17 verses 1 through 5, where in the middle of verse 2, Jesus is praying. He's praying to his Father and he says, you know, you've given me authority over all flesh, so that I can give eternal life to those you've given to me out of the world, basically. So it's a really strong election predestination text. And I was trying, you know, and I know that some people in our church have a really hard time with that doctrine. So I was saying, well, look, this is not, it was a section on how this should be giving you comfort. Hope and comfort.
Not making you feel alienated more.
Right, God. Right, right, right. And how Jesus means for you to feel comforted by it. And that's the page that was gone. That's the page that was lost. And I got there.
I mean, maybe God didn't want you to say that. Maybe he's like, I don't want you to make it easier for anyone because weakness is for stupid people.
So I sat there. I was sewing. You can see it in my face, but I got to the page. I realized immediately what had happened. And it never has happened to me before because I have always count my pages and make sure they're in order before I get up in the pulpit. And they've really never been out of order. But this was the first time I didn't count in however long I've been counting. And they just happened to be out of order. So page 11, which is a page I lost, was like between 17 and 18. I know you're freaking out. Wait a minute. You preach sermons for 18 pages? Well, they're 18-point font. So
it's not
as long as you think. They usually get into about 40 minutes. Just sat there and I don't know if I freeze.
No, you covered it. You kind of laughed.
But then you get back to where you but then
you get to that page and you realize what you didn't say.
Yeah.
But I don't think that the argument was lost. It made sense.
Yeah, well, anyway. I lost my sermon page. I'm very upset.
I mean, so I am curious. I don't know. I'm not really curious, actually. I don't want to think about it anymore because I'm afraid of what God will do to me. If anything, 2020 has made me deeply superstitious. So I'm like, when that fly landed on Mike Pence, I thought, God is sending us a sign. But you assure me that that's not true.
Now,
where are the blood moons when I need them? But I do think, okay, the whole world is suffering right now because of COVID and the election.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think this election is a unique kind of suffering for American people.
Yeah.
And the world as it watches us be dysfunctional. And Christians, I think, me included, spend a lot of time trying to get away from suffering, like just trying really hard not to have it come near me. Which isn't really the Christian call. We're not actually supposed to run away from it. We're not supposed to avoid it at all cost.
Right. Well, but this is why, you know, you're supposed to pray for God to increase your sanctification. But I found myself rarely praying for humility.
I'm never, ever, ever going to pray for God to increase my sanctification. I wasn't going to do it before, but now I've really, really learned that may be the one prayer he wants to answer, but I'm not going to ask for
it. He's waiting for you to pray for that in his name. And you can be sure that if you pray for that in his name, that he will give it to you.
Yeah, but you know what? He's already given it to me without me asking for it, so I don't need to ask. That would be so foolhardy of me right now. So I just finished this last week. Well, I've been listening to Mere Christianity, but I finished Rod Dreher's Live Not by Lies, which feels a touch hysterical about the oncoming totalitarian life that we're all going to have. But the stuff that he said about loneliness, he quoted somebody else, and then I went and read a longer article, I think is really prescient, because one of the unique griefs of this time has been the isolation that people have felt from each other. And I think it's a uniquely Christian kind of, like, I think if you're not a Christian, you can't understand true loneliness, because you have never experienced true community in the body of Christ since.
Yeah.
And of course, Christ supersedes that with himself. He's able to draw us together in one way or another. But I think if you are not part of a church and you haven't felt separated from a church during this time, you don't really know the kind of alienation and isolation that Christ endured on the cross. Right. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
So that's a little go ahead and become Christian. My evangelistic life is over. I'm never going to encourage anyone to believe in God again. Anyway, we've got a lot of phone calls to make.
Yeah.
So I think we should move on with our day.
Yeah.
And I hope that our listener will continue to pray that God will do nice things instead of really, really, really mean ones.
He doesn't do mean things. he's very good.
He is good. I hope he's good. I hope this turns out good. So thanks for listening, and maybe we'll be back next week.